Hey, welcome to North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, working remotely from points unknown. And, of course, Bill Newell off tonight, and always glad for Bill's help. But welcome to another Monday night with Tim Kearns. Tim, we're still here. Pretty amazing.
Yes, we are, Rick, and you are there, and I'm here.
Well, wherever you are, you're not here, but we soon might be. You've had, we're just talking off the air here, you've had your COVID vaccinations?
I was done last Friday. I'm sorry, 2 weeks ago.
Okay, so it's that, you're supposed to have a 2 week wait after that second shot, is that the idea?
Yep, so I am good to go.
All right. And people still are, people who are still, what's the word I'm looking for, paying attention to the advice are doing okay. There is an upsurge a little bit in terms of people who are getting COVID because of the relaxation of, or letting their guard down, I would say, more than anything.
Yeah, that's just it, Rick. I mean, they relaxed the restrictions, and everybody's thinking, okay, well, it's over now. I've had shots. Let's go back out and be stupid. And this is what we're getting. We're getting a third surge.
I don't want to call it good news, but one of the, I guess, encouraging numbers is that the death toll is way, way, way down in Massachusetts, thank goodness. And if that trend...
Yeah, but it's also going back up again. The number of cases is going back
well,
up again.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll see where it ends up. You know, that's the thing. You still have to be diligent. You still have to be patient. And on that note, I think as we talk sports tonight, we're going to be checking in with Marblehead football coach Jim Rudloff. We'll talk with our usual sports journalist. We've got a brand new post that I just put up online with Danny Ventura of the Boston Herald. Some really insightful information from Danny V. And we've got other stuff that we're going to be posting as well. All that said and done, I think that in general, from what I've read, except for an isolated incident here or there, the kids have been leading the way. They've been doing what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, you know, they've been good about it, but I think it gets back to, you know, their coaches setting the tone, saying, this is what we have to do. If you want to continue to play, we have to follow these rules, and they're doing it.
They are, and so far, so good. Fall 2 is at midseason. The Greater Boston League winter season is about to come to an end. I talked with Antonio Anderson, the Lynn English boys basketball coach today, and they will finish their season. I believe they finished their regular season tonight, and then they have playoffs coming up later on this week. And then, of course, it transitions over into spring. So, all in all, Tim, I think it's pretty remarkable that the scheduling has been so creative to allow at least the Lynn schools to get some semblance of high school sports because they were shut down for most of the year.
Yeah, you know, for the kids, you know, it's the opportunity to get back on the field, competition against friends and neighbors around the surrounding area. You know, Lynn took a very drastic approach to try to curtail the spread of the virus. And some communities weren't willing to do that. But again, they did what they thought was in the best interest of the community. And the community including the students.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But at least, again, they had an opportunity to get back and get a taste of competition.
Yep, they've done well. Talking with, again, Lynn English high school basketball coach Antonio Anderson, they're 4-0, two-time defending Division I champions, and, you know, again, a shame that it wasn't a regular season, but they're doing well, and things are progressing as we head towards spring. Coach, maybe changing channels a little bit before we talk with Marblehead football coach Jim Rudloff, what's your eagle eye telling you about the Red Sox? I mean, it's a different team. They are under a brand new old manager, on-field manager, and with the combination that they have down there in Florida, they put together a pretty good spring record.
Well, spring is spring, and the regular season is the regular season.
Yeah, except we remember a couple of years ago when they didn't pay any attention to spring training in terms of pitching, and they never recovered from that.
Yeah, you've got to... Yeah, they've had some injuries. They've had some coronavirus cases. Are they going to bring it north with them? You know, there's still just so many questions regarding the virus and all. They've got a lot of new names on this team.
A lot of no names, I think you mean.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll definitely grant you that. And it's going to be interesting to see how it all meshes together. There's a couple of players from trade made last year. How are they? Are they going to continue to fit in? You know, we got a lot of new faces, young faces. The pitching staff. You know, it's going to be who are you today?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's going to be an interesting season to see the way it pans out.
All right, what about Bill Belichick buying a whole new team?
Well, he had to do it.
Okay.
So we lost a lot of guys last year. Chung retires. Adam, we don't know if he's going to be able to play.
If who's going to be a retire? Who? Who?
You've got a ton of cap space to use, which he really hasn't had in the past. So he just went out and he used it. We've got really good players. You know, he brought back players that we lost over the last couple of years who were really solid players for us, and we expect them to be the same, and they're all glad to be back here. And it's interesting, there's been a lot written about, well, people say, players don't want to come and play for Belichick, but everybody that's come here says, I want to play for Belichick.
Well, I think what's interesting about this one, this time, it's reminiscent to me, Coach, of 2000, the year 2000, when he brought in all these free agents who were no names, to coin a phrase, but they were solid veterans, and they played well together, you know, as a team, as a unit. Bledsoe went down, Brady filled in, and Brady at that point, I don't know if he was Brady or not, but it worked.
Yeah, that 2001 season certainly benefited by having gone out and got solid players. You know, Bill's greatest success has been in the third round of the draft, where you still get quality players, but you get intelligent players at reasonable prices, and these guys are hungry to get a better paycheck. And so that's what they do. You sign them to a contract that allows you to maximize their service, and if they progress, you have an opportunity to make the choice. Do you want to sign them for more or let them walk and find another body of the same type? And that's what Bill has been so masterful at. You know, you look at the players from 2001 to 2004 season, and how many of those guys were veterans who still had some, you know, meat on the tires and were really hungry to win. They were good players on good teams, but hadn't won, and they came here and they won big time because they were able to, you know, put their egos in their back pocket and play like maniacs.
Well, I'm pumped. I like the acquisitions. I think it looks like a really solid all-around team. I don't know if it's going to be great or not, but it looks pretty good. Coach, we need to take a break and come back. We'll check in with Jim Rudloff, Marblehead High School football. They're 3-0 in this Fall 2 season. I think there may be three or four games left, so we'll see where Marblehead is at midseason. We know they're leading everybody. And then we'll talk later on with Gary Larrabee. I'm sure you've got some golf notes that you can check in with Gary. And we'll check in with Mike Grenier about the 500 Celtics. And what is it, the Elite Eight coming up? Is that where we are?
Yeah.
Oh, and wait a minute. What about women's basketball? Where are they right now?
They are starting the same thing. Connecticut is playing Baylor right now, and it is now 12-4 UConn.
Okay.
Game over.
Okay, so we'll see what the margin of victory is, right?
Exactly.
Okay. All right, we'll take a break, and we'll come back and check in with Jim Rudloff of Marblehead High School Football. We'll be right back.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is working to help keep you and your community safe from the threat of novel or new coronavirus. Take the following everyday steps to help avoid the spread of all respiratory viruses. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Cover your cough or sneeze with a tissue. Throw the tissue away and then wash your hands. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects or surfaces, such as remote controls and doorknobs. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. And stay home if you are sick. Call your healthcare provider if you develop fever, cough, or difficulty breathing. For more tips, visit cdc.gov.
All right, we're back live. Jeez. All right, Jim Rudloff, Marblehead High School football has joined us now. And, Jim, it's great to be talking with you once again. How are you over there across the bridge from where I am?
All things considered, very good, thank you. Things have been going good. Everyone is relatively healthy and safe. So, considering where we are, good.
You know,
good is the answer.
Coach, before we get to specifics, we talked a couple of weeks ago about the novelty of winter football and training and the 2 weeks and getting ready for this game and that game and the conditions. Now we are, we're almost into April. The moon is high. We get Easter. You get Passover. I've seen these little blossom things coming up through the ground, green and with color on them, stuff, flowers. So what is the routine like right now, Coach, in terms of your being a high school football coach? How are things going at the moment, in terms of routine?
For the team or for me?
Yes, for you. I mean, this is really different because the kids are going to do what you tell them to do. But for you, this is just it's the novelty of getting into it. You're all set, when it starts in February, we're going to get this done. But now here we are almost a month later, and it's just a whole different ball game. It's still football, but man, it's just weird.
Yeah, so we didn't expect to have the weather that we had. You know, it's funny to think back in February, we were, the coaches were all texting back and forth, hey, I found these ski pants on Amazon. They're only $40, so we were all trying to get, gloves that we could wear that we could flip a football with and hats. And, we didn't buy the golf shirt that you get every year or whatever it is to wear on the sidelines because we all just figured we'd be wearing sweatshirts and sweatpants. And so the weather's cooperated and that's been great. The hardest thing has just been, figuring out how to teach in the spring and do football at the same time. I think we're all struggling. Those are the guys that are coming from a non-teaching job, and even the guys that are teaching is just figuring out. I know it would sound like, well, what's the difference between the spring and the fall, but we're just not used to doing it. The football season started during February vacation. It's going to end during April vacation. So it's taking two vacations that we've always had.
Mm-hmm.
But the season's not as long either. So there's good and there's bad. It's trying to figure out. I've had a tough time teaching a little bit, getting used to that and doing that. The football's been after school. The football's been, our athletic director's done a great job of keeping everything routine for us. So, a lot of things were simplified. There's no weight room that was open. We just opened our weight room today. So a lot of things that we're able to do, meetings, things like that, were done on Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
So the routine wasn't too bad. It was just, all of a sudden in the middle of February, figuring out how I'm going to teach my classes and coach a football team.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
It was, for all the assistant coaches too.
But that's sort of like an emergency contingency. You're going to do it no matter what. And then now, 4 or 5 weeks later, okay, here you are still doing it. And, what's the status of the kids at Marblehead High School? Are they in, the out? Is it hybrid? What is it?
Yeah, so we are going, this will be our last week of hybrid. We've been hybrid all the way through the fall. We started, I think, in October,
mm-hmm.
going hybrid. And in that model, we've been pretty much the same, and this is our last week of it. Starting next Monday, we're going to be full time. So we're going to have all the kids in classes. We've already set up the classrooms to represent the 3 foot distance rather than the 6 foot distance. We have, you know, blue tape on the floor saying, you know, the section where, you know, the distance between the teachers and where kind of the teacher's teaching space is. So the school looks a little bit different, but still with half of the kids, half the capacity, it's not the same. We'll have some kids returning from remote learning, yet we'll still have some remote classes if the kids choose to do that. So we're getting ready to make a big change, and that'll be another thing just sort of for the team, for the kids, another, you know, because it's very different. You know, you notice the big difference in the practices in the fall when you go from no school to school. You know, there's a massive difference there. The kids are tired. The kids aren't used to being.
Yeah.
They go from summer into classes all day. So now they'll be in school every day. I think that can be a good thing for sports. You know, but the kids are, again, they're very routine-based, and they're used to the routine. But you and I talked about this before, and Tim, you know, with the idea of nobody had to motivate the kids this year for sports. The minute the kids got on the ice or the field or whatever, they were so excited to be there. And I think the same thing's going to happen next week. The kids are going to be excited to see each other every day. They haven't seen cohort B or cohort A, you know, for example. So I think, again, we opened the weight room today for the first time, and getting the kids motivated to lift was nothing. You didn't have to do anything to motivate them. So I think, you know, as we keep reintroducing or introducing these things back to the kids' lives, you know, they're 100% behind doing them. And so I don't think motivation is very difficult at all. So hopefully next week goes fine.
That's great to hear. Tim?
In terms of the weight room, opening it back up, are you limiting the number of kids that lift at one time so you sort of rotate them through the schedule?
Yeah, it's the same thing. You know, we have a COVID protocol for everything now, you know, and that's the thing is with the size of our weight room, we were able to get 15 kids in at a time. You know, three kids on a rack, you know, so that one's always working, one's spotting, one's resting. You know, with a break in between, we clean everything down. We have the kind of the COVID misting machines that spray the chemicals onto everything. So, but we also were very fortunate. Our weight room opens up into the outdoors, so the kids that were not working out were able to be spaced out outside and get some things done. But, you know, hopefully a lot of the older kids were able to lift at home, so you could see right away in the weight room that they were just continuing something that they were already doing. But for a lot of the younger kids, you know, the whole idea is getting them introduced to the weight room in that freshman sophomore year, and they haven't been able to do that, so some of the kids are just starting out, and you're hoping that, you know, you want them to have legs for this weekend's games, so you're not trying to kill them, but at the same time, you know, you've got to start somewhere.
Coach, the on-field product, if we get to that, you as a coach and the coaches that I've talked with, man, there's a laser focus on that. It's still football, and it's between the lines and so on, and there's pluses and minuses, but overall, when you look at your team, your kids, whether it's September or whether it's February, you know, you chart the progress of them, and I think I don't know what your report card would be, but it's going to be pretty good progressively, and maybe you can tell me a little bit about where you think your kids are.
We've gotten off to a fast start, certainly, you know, just, you know, looking at the scoreboard in the games, but it's not necessarily always about that either. You know, you're going up against, for any one of us, no matter what team I'm talking about in the NEC, what we're going up against isn't a fair representation all the time. And by that, I don't mean the level of competition. You don't know who, what team is have six kids in COVID protocol. You don't know if they lost their starting quarterback or their starting running back or their tight end that week because their cousin or their uncle or someone that was with them over the weekend tested positive. So they're waiting for their test. And how many practices did someone miss? And did someone on the coaching staff miss a practice? So, you know, it's not really a fair representation of, you know, Marblehead's playing so-and-so this week because, you know, we've got a bunch of kids out and they've got a bunch of kids out. And so really what the coaches are doing is scrambling, you know, and constantly trying to fill the holes, fill the gaps, make sure that they can put a team out there that can do what they've been trying to teach all week long. And we're all doing that. You know, everyone's facing it right now. So, you know, so I think some of the teams have been hit harder than the others. We haven't had to travel yet. We're going to do our last three games all away. And so I've said this to every coach that's come to Marblehead. I can't imagine what it's like. Some teams have arrived by car. Some teams have arrived by bus. You know, it's not the same, and it's not, you know, and for us, routine means everything, you know, to stay in that routine. So, it's been challenging, you know, that part of it's been challenging. So I don't think, you know, I don't want this to come out the wrong way, but in some cases, I don't know if it's always been a fair fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think for some of the teams, they're struggling, and I don't care who's better than who. If you lost nine kids to COVID or something, you're not the same team. So, you know, I think the NEC did something smart this year. They're not going to declare a winner of the league or anything like that. You know, certainly right now, none of the teams have the same amount of games, it seems like, I don't think.
Right.
And we don't, I know certainly we keep running into a case where the teams we're playing don't have as much film to give us as we have for them. They haven't played as many games. We certainly haven't played the same opponents. So it's very, very different, you know, but I will say that the coaches have been great about it. The athletic directors are doing, you know, the best they can. And more than anything else, that, you know, the kids have been fantastic. So it just is just good to be out there.
You know, it's strange. I went to Gloucester Salem a couple weeks ago. Gloucester had 15 kids on the field playing. And I was like, where is everybody? You know, and then the following week I went to Beverly Dam is one at Beverly, and it was so strange to see the kids from Beverly standing outside of the locker room in their uniforms with their helmets in their hands, waiting for mom and dad to come pick them up after the game. It was like watching a Pop Warner scenario where the parents come by and pick the kids up in their uniforms after the game. It was such like a throwback moment.
Yeah, I tell you, it's strange. We haven't, you know, we're all doing the same thing. We got the kids basically like hockey bags because for the first time ever, they're bringing their equipment everywhere with them. They're bringing their water with them too, if you think about that. We always provide, you know, every team provides water at practice for their kids, but now they have to bring their own water. So we've actually built in water breaks to the practice, which we've never done before. You know, the kids would just bring the water, there would be water at every station, for example. So that's been very different, but yeah, we had a funny one today where the first day we're using the weight room, and when the kids got out of the weight room and they came out to the field, they all realized, well, I got to drop trial right here and change because there's no locker room for me to go into, and all of a sudden, you know, pants started dropping and they started putting on their pads, and you know, we tried to do, if you've ever seen, you know, a Patriots game when one of the Patriots players has a bathroom emergency, you see towels and blankets going up everywhere, and that's kind of what it looked like on Piper Field today. So, but yeah, you know, it's different, it's strange, but you just do what you got to do.
Jim, I want to ask about the kids, the article in the paper today in just a second. Nick Giannino writing about your quarterback Robertson, and your comments about him. But before that, all of this is. This is inside information, Coach, because we don't get that kind of stuff, you know, as observers, because we're just used to your talking with us about what we see and the routines in a normal year. But I'm wondering, what are the conversations like between you and the coaches in the NEC? And I don't mean to give anything away. I'm looking for that. But in terms of the overall, understanding and the agreements, the things that you guys all see in common, across the league and how you as coaches and as teachers are dealing with this with the kids and maybe some of the things that the kids are having to go through. And you've touched on some of that, but, you know, there has to be sort of a common thread when you talk to, the coaches in the league.
Yeah, I will say this. It's a good question because it's different now. Years ago, there were coaches that were in the league for a longer period of time and athletic directors too. You know, you would have Steve Dembowski, who had been at Swampscott for years, Gary Malaya, John Sullivan at Danvers. You know, there just was a lot of veteran coaches or coaches that were ADs, or they had an AD that used to be the coach. And the communication was, I think, a lot more effective back then because you had people that kind of had been there a long time and it really could kind of say, this is what we've got to do, this is what it has to be, and I think more people would listen because they had been doing it for years and years. You know, in our league, we really don't have that. We've got a couple of us that have been around. I might be the veteran.
Yeah,
at
I think.
Years.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and that's not a long time. And in my 10 years, we've had 3 athletic directors.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things I wish we would do a better job as coaches is get together more often and have, and I think we've all expressed this, I've heard this from all the other coaches, is have an opportunity to get together and lay down like, hey, you know, we've got to trade this much film, you've got to do this, you know, and this year is going to be different, we need to do this. And we didn't get a chance to do that this year. There were
right.
no meetings, you know,
right.
we didn't have our typical NEC meeting, or we didn't have our meeting with the referees or get really any opportunity to get together. But with that being said, you know, I've talked to Bobby Serino a number of times, you know, Ryan Nolan a number of times, you know, we'll talk. Andrew Morenci's been great. You know, Steve Cummings is a great coach over at Saugus. And when you're playing, when you're getting ready to play, you know, I can pick up the phone at any time, call those guys that have called me and say, hey, what's going on? Like, what happened with you guys and what happened to that game? And the coaches do a really good job of communicating, and we have really good guys in our league, you know, really good people, that, you know, aren't, it's not, you know, not everyone's cloak and dagger and things like that. We understand kind of what we're doing, the reality of what we're doing here. And so that part of the communication has been good. You know, if there's been an issue or anything that anyone has about, you know, concerns about where they're going to be playing or things like that, it's usually ironed out. And, you know, like I said, though, I think, but eventually we've got to get back to a point where the coaches really start to talk about what we want to do as a league, because the league has been just a morphing, changing, you know, with what just happened with the GBL and bringing on Masco and the GBL experience, the GBL bringing them into the NEC was a short-lived experiment, and our league just has not been stable in the last 5 or so years. And that stability, a couple changes in coaching, a couple changes in athletic directors, changes in principals. The principals really have a strong hand in what happens in the league right now. You know, I think they're probably the most powerful voice in everything that happens in the league right now. So those changes are constant, you know, and the one thing that maybe is you can try to anchor it with is the coaches, and I'd like to see us all do a little bit better job because someone just needs to take the reins. It used to be, you know, it was Steve for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and he did a Steve Dombowski.
Yep.
And then, you know, before him was really Gary Malaya. So it's been, you know, we really haven't had that in a while.
Well, I'll tell you, Coach, you just gave me a great idea for a coaches roundtable coming up in the spring and the summer. So I'll talk to you about that later. But Tim, final question for Coach, and then I want to ask him one more question about his kids.
I'll hand it back over to you, Rick, because you know this is a wild, wacky season, Jim. How's the kid? I guess one last thing is, how's the kid dealt with the fact that there'll be no champion for the NEC?
Well, you know, I think the kids have a tougher time understanding it than the coaches. Even I did at first. At first, I was kind of like, well, you know, you win all your games, you win the league, don't you? But then you realize not every teams are playing the same. Not everybody's playing the same teams. So how could somebody claim that they're the champion if, you know, if they're playing, you know, if they don't ever play the top 2 or 3 teams? You know, how can somebody call themselves the champion if they only have played 2 games, you know? But at the same time, it's not fair for the one team that was fortunate enough to do all that to say, well, then we win, you know, automatically. Everyone's got a different set of circumstances. Everybody's struggling a little bit. So I think it's easier for the adults to understand it than the kids. The kids don't care. Our kids have been great. They just know that, you know, and we say this every year when, you know, you hear about Max Preps is gonna rank the teams, or the Globe is ranking them, or, you know, they're doing it by a point system or a power system or all these things. The kids don't care. The kids, you know, always say, if we win every game, we win. You know, so that's, and I think, you know, for us that this year, that's the tack that our kids are taking. Win every game and then worry about, you know, at the end of the year, worry about, you know, how everybody else sorts it out. But, I think the coaches understand it. We've all, you know, seen each other struggle and seeing what other teams are going through and you know, thank God that we haven't had that or you know, may still have that. So nobody wants to be in that position, and so I think it's fair for everybody.
Coach, you're 3-0, I didn't see what's on the schedule next. This is Easter week coming up. It's Passover. What's next for Marblehead?
So we have we go Masco, Danvers, Masco, Swampscott. So
and when is
a tough schedule ahead?
When's the Masco game? The first Masco game.
So this first Masco game will be Saturday at 2:00.
Oh, okay.
At Marblehead.
Okay.
And then the rest of our games, I think, from that point forward are going to be Friday nights, and they're all away.
Okay. And finally, I'm reading this article by Nick Giannotto on your comments on your quarterback, Josh Robertson, about he was like 5 foot nothing last year. So tell me a little bit about his progress.
Yeah, so Josh was last year, was a sophomore and wasn't really even the freshman quarterback. He was a kid that at the end of the freshman games would get in. And we had a bunch of mishaps last year with our quarterback position in the preseason where, kids got injured. We moved a different kid in there. He got injured when we scrimmaged BC High. I think the Trapeo kid from BC High who, you know, at that time a year ago was only 6'9", 370. He took our quarterback and threw him like into the seventh row of the stand.
Jeez.
But Josh ended up having to start for us in the first game last year, and we just were hoping to get through that game. And it was against North Andover, the defending Super Bowl champions, and we ended up winning that game. And Josh had a tremendous game, and we ended up going with him the rest of the way. But he was, you know, he legitimately was maybe, you know, maybe he was 5'9", you know. 5'9¾" or something, but he legitimately weighed 140 pounds. And so there wasn't a lot you could do other than, you know, please hand the ball off, throw it before someone hurts you, you know, but he did a great job for us last year. So he put on muscle, I mean, tremendous amount of muscle. Like if there's ever a kid that you want to film to show other kids, this is the form you use in lifting. It's Josh. And, he grew, he's about 6 foot now. So we've been really lucky, you know, there is that it was a kid that, you know, is growing a little bit, getting stronger. And so it just opens up our offense a little bit in that now he has enough meat on his bones that we can say, you know, go get him, Tiger. You know, if you want to pull it, you know, and then we can design some runs for him. And it makes our offense a little bit better because we have a couple of different weapons that we can use and keep the other guys guessing a little bit. So, you know, he did everything that he needed to do, to get himself ready to take a step up the next year, you know, not just be the same kid. And so it's even, you know, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but, you know, he's only a junior.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, this is going to be, fun to continue. I hope he stays healthy and has a good year this year and we'll go from there.
Yeah, just what the rest of the NEC wants to hear, I'm sure. Coach, thank you so much and, we'll talk to you soon. Stay safe and be well, please.
All right, Tim and Rick, thank you. You guys stay safe, too.
Thank you, Jim.
That's
Jim Rudloff, the head coach at Marblehead High School. Always informative, great teacher, great coach, good for the NEC and good for the kids, and we appreciate it. We'll come right back here in just a second with Gary Larrabee, talk some golf and other stuff here on MSO News Sports, so stay with us.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Okay, we are back now. A little bit late for Gary Larrabee, but always great to be joined by a golf writer, sports historian, and all-around good guy. Gary, how you doing?
Doing wonderfully. How are you?
We're okay. I'm okay on this side of the bridge. Tim's okay on the other side of the bridge, I think.
Yes, I am.
Yes, I am. Okay, good. So, Gary, where do we start tonight?
Well, we can talk briefly about the always unpredictable WGC Dell Technologies Match Play Championship that was held over the weekend in Austin, Texas, where Billy Horschel learned once again how to win a big event. You know, he won the FedEx Cup playoffs a few years ago, won about $10-12 million for doing that, and here he is again showing up and winning another big event, the Match Play. He's a wonderful example, guys, of a little guy, doesn't hit it a mile, slim, lean, about 150 pounds, but boy, he can play golf. He's a shot maker, he's a putter, he's a short game player. And there he comes out of the weekend with no one probably picking him to win. He wins his sixth PGA Tour event. But another example, Tim, where you don't have to be muscle-bound, you don't have to be a Bryson DeChambeau to win one of the premier events on the PGA Tour every year.
I'm going to ask, does it work to a player like Horschel's work in his favor? That, you know, at his size, he plays within himself. He doesn't try to muscle the ball. He focuses on placement, on keeping it in play, keeping it in the fairway. And, with the technique that these guys have, you know, he's able to drive it, 270, 280 easily?
And that's more than adequate, as you can tell. This was his sixth PGA Tour triumph, and he's waiting in the wings to win his first major, although he's won a lot of money, and he's, proven that he's right now got some very good form with his game, and now with just one more event, the Valero Texas Open this week, before we move to Augusta National next week, Horschel has to be one of the names popped into the hat likely contenders at the Masters, although Horschel has not had a very particularly exceptional record at Augusta National, but he's there. Of course, two of the biggest stories early in the week was the fact that Rory McIlroy and Bryson DeChambeau were not around very long. You know, the tournament started on Wednesday and they were gone by Friday, so two of the biggest names in the tournament did not do very well, but
Rory thought it was pool play and not match play.
I get you. So the waiting game continues, but we're getting closer to the first major of the year, and we still don't know if Brooks Koepka will be able to play because of his surgery he had on his knee a few weeks ago. We know Tiger will not play, but lots of question marks. One more event. And then we go to Augusta National next week at this time.
You know, with so many named players questionable, either not play or questionable to play in the Masters, there's a lot of doors opening up for a lot of guys that haven't won before. And looking at the recent play of some of what we would consider the favorites, who have, you know, been up and down as we get in the weeks leading into the Masters, there's a lot of opportunity for some of the second tier players, so to speak, on the tour to slide in there. Someone like Horschel, you know, he wins the Mass Play, in which I would think you've got to be really good with your shot selection and placement and maintaining control of your bag, that is making good club selection. So when you get to Augusta, when you have to do the same thing.
So true, and but that does not mean a short hitter, a relatively short hitter like Horschel, could not be a contender at the Masters. But we are getting close. We also, obviously, the defending champion is Dustin Johnson, and I think he still has to be considered the favorite. But let's see what happens this week in Texas, because some of the top name players are playing this week in Texas, and that'll be the last tune-up before the big show next week.
Is Kevin Na going to get paired with Dustin Johnson to make sure that he taps out?
We shall see. Beyond this, though, Tim, from a local standpoint, we can be very excited that virtually all the golf courses are open. And even with all the rain, he actually didn't hurt the course. It's been pretty dry the last couple of weeks. So every course is open. Everybody's out there starting to play. And here we are. We're still in March.
Sounds good. Are there local stuff? Is there local stuff coming up, Gary?
The only real event locally is the Massachusetts Men's Four Ball Championship. 2 days at Ipswich Country Club and Turner Hill. And that's not till early May.
Okay.
I think April is a month for all the players to tune up a little bit and get their games in shape. And the real tournament season kicks in May. Looking ahead to the Mass Open in June, the Mass Amateur in July, the Women's Amateur in August. And, of course, we can't forget, guys, that a year from now, we'll be getting all fired up for the U.S. Open being played at the Country Club in Brookline.
Very nice, very nice. What was the other one I wanted to ask? Oh, the column, Gary, your column in the Salem News. Can you want to tease that for us?
Sure, thanks. Not this weekend, but next weekend, our Masters weekend, we'll get the golf column underway, and we'll be writing about probably, arguably, the best golf course superintendent we've ever had here on the North Shore, who recently retired after 38 years at Salem Country Club just a year ago. He's receiving a very special award from his organization, the New England organization, and we'll leave it at that for
this
column of the year kicking off.
Very good. All right, listen, and I'm gonna put this bug in your ear. I want to ask you to think about, because I'm always curious about your experiences down at Augusta National, Gary. It just fascinates me. I want you to think about maybe something that surprised you in your coverage down there. Something maybe in your first time down or your X number of time down, but something that just came across as a surprise to you. Can you do that?
Absolutely.
I'd love it. I'd love it because the stories that come from down there are just amazing. Whenever I see the promo on television and when I see the coverage, it's just like, oh man, this is such an amazing place. And of course, I don't know about you, Tim, but it always brings me back to Arnie and Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player just automatically.
You know, it's the good old days. I haven't been there for 30 years, but those 6 years I was there, quite memorable, and I'll be happy and looking forward to sharing a few special memories.
That would be awesome. That would be awesome. Gary, thank you so much. Stay safe. We'll talk again next week.
And enjoy all the college hoops and hockey stuff going on, and we got to root for UMass hockey, huh, Rick?
Go UMass, baby. ECAC champs. Hockey East.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Final four. Thanks, Gary. Take care.
Very good. Carry on, fellas.
All right. That's Gary Larrabee, sports journalist, golf writer, sports historian. We're going to take a break, and then we'll come back with Mike Grenier. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Bill Newell off this week, and we'll take one more little break here and come back with Mike. Stay with us.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back, and Mike Grenier is here, Tim Kearns is here, I'm here, I'm Rick Moore, and Mike, welcome back. How you doing?
We're doing great. You know, obviously, with the NCAA tournament winding down here, it's been kind of exciting to watch. I love the underdogs. I'd love to see them go on, but, you know, Gonzaga is 29. Rick, I know we want to talk about the Celtics a little bit, but I was kind of looking up teams that have finished undefeated to win the NCAA basketball championships.
Mm-hmm.
There's only been seven of them over the years. And Gonzaga has something trying to do that's something that hasn't been done since 1976, and that's if they could finish 32-0.
Oh, wow. That had to be UCLA back then, right?
No. Yeah, that's right. I think, Tim, if you're aboard too, you might we might remember this. I certainly remember the 1976 Indiana team.
Okay.
By Bobby Knight.
Okay.
They went 32-0.
Whoa.
32-0. And they had two future NBA players on that team. Kent Benson, the center.
Mm-hmm.
And Scotty May. Was kind of a forward, I believe.
Wow.
Kind of a big, strong guy. And they both had, you know, fairly lengthy NBA careers. And, of course, Bobby Knight was the very regimented, belligerent, bellicose coach of that team. And, you know, but he had, arguably, you know, certainly one of the finest college basketball teams of all time, and they did it, you know, on the court with a 32-0 record. And I still remember watching those guys, how awesome they were. And you know, Gonzaga hopes to achieve that. But if you know, I can recall some other team. Rick, you mentioned UCLA, the 1973 UCLA team. Led by none other than Boston fans will know him, Bill Walton.
Bill Walton, yep.
Bill Walton. They went 30-0, and throughout the length of Walton's career, he won two NCAA championships in a row.
Wow.
And college freshmen were not eligible in those years, so he had to wait till his sophomore year to play, okay? Mm-hmm. And he won a couple of championships, and one of those teams was undefeated at 30-0, and I still remember the year after they won it, they carried a winning streak of 88 games overall.
Yes.
88 straight games. Mm-hmm. I know you're. I'm hearing some acknowledgement there, which is great. And do you remember who beat that team that had won the 88 straight?
Notre Dame.
That's right, Tim. And over at Notre Dame's arena at their gym, and I remember watching the game. John Shumate was the star of that Notre Dame team, and Digger Phelps, I believe, was the coach.
Yep.
So. So, yeah, so that was a phenomenal team. And, you know, the Lou Alcindor, who, of course, became Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, he won three titles, okay? And he won more NCAA titles, Tim, three, than games lost in his entire career. He only lost two games in his entire career, and he won three NCAA titles.
Oh, my
That's
goodness.
Absurd.
Yeah.
UCLA highlights to me was when UCLA played Memphis State in the final for the championship.
Yep.
And Bill Walton hit 21 of 22 shots.
Correct, yeah.
None of them was probably further than 5 feet from the basket.
Yep.
But he hit bang shot after bang shot after bang shot.
Probably the most dominant performance we've seen, right, Tim, in an NCAA championship game. I 21 of 22. I mean, what's that percentage? 97.5 or something? I mean, just absurd. And, you know, that Lou Alcindor teams were great, of course. And Rick, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the earliest team to go undefeated, and that was Bill Russell's.
San Francisco.
San Francisco Dons, D-O-N-S, right?
Their
name. They went 29-0, and the other star player on that team, or at least certainly a contributing member of that team, was Casey Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they made up the core of that team that went 29-0. You know, certainly a great team. And how about, of course, we know the history of the Celtics, of course, and Bill Russell, he won the NCAA title a couple times, 2 years in a row, and then went on to win the
Olympics.
Yeah, you know, not only won the NBA title, they won the Olympic championship. So, what an incredible list of feats under Bill Russell.
I still want to meet Bill Russell and just shake his hand, because not only all of that, Mike, which would make him stand out forever as a pantheon, but the life that he lived. And the dignity as a civil rights leader, even though he never wore that mantle, he never put the crown of civil rights leader on, but he was. He became an actor after that. He was a broadcaster. He was a coach. And just a model for kids today everywhere.
I agree. If I could allude back to Alcindor, by the way, and Tim, you may or may not know this, but Alcindor was such a dominant player with the dunk shot, that after the UCLA won it in 66, 67, NCAA basketball outlawed
yes.
the dunk. Right?
And he went to the Skyhook, right?
Yeah, in fact, he was such a dominant player that they outlawed the dunk shot. I mean, how crazy is that? It didn't matter, though. He still won it the following, you know, he still kept winning, and UCLA still kept winning championships. And the one team here that actually I didn't mention in those early champions was the year after Bill Russell won it, North Carolina, I think under Dean Smith. They went like 29 or 30-0. And the thing about that team, they beat somebody named Wilt Chamberlain in the final, who played for Kansas. Wilt Chamberlain, probably the most dominant big man in college history in terms of intimidation, and he was so much bigger than everybody else back then, you know? And North Carolina beat him, and that was in 1957. So,
hey, great stuff, man. Good stuff.
It's incredible. I guess what spurred me to do that is I'm looking at Gonzaga this week, and of course I watched him beat Creighton. I was watching the local kid, Marcus Zagorowski, who scored 19 against him. It was by far Creighton's best player. And you got to give this particular Gonzaga team a lot of credit. No team has been able to go undefeated since that 1976 ferocious Indiana team of Bobby Knight, 32-0. And of course, you know, Gonzaga, if they win tomorrow night, they'll be 30-0, and then they go to the Final Four with an opportunity to finish 32-0. So, got to give them credit.
You know, one of there was a positive aspect when they decided to ban dunking in college is it forced the centers to become much better shooters in and around the basket.
I agree. No question about it. And maybe that's why Bill Walton became such so good around the basket. Like you said, the night that he shot 21 for 22, everything was 5-6 feet out, bank shots, and I still remember that game. He was just like, it was a ridiculous performance.
It was ridiculous. It was absolutely ridiculous.
It was a ridiculous performance. And of course, that Indiana team, you know, 1976, I mean, they faced some tough competition as well in those days, but to go 32-0, and I did get to meet Bobby Knight once in the Celtics locker room, Rick.
Really?
Yeah, when he was still coaching and he had a couple days off, and it might have been after the college season, mm-hmm. he came to visit his old buddy and ex-teammate, somebody named John Havlicek.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember walking into the Celtics locker room. It was a couple hours before the game, and Havlicek was going to be playing. And, you know, and Knight was there to just say hi and mm-hmm. be there for a day or two. And mm-hmm. I remember going in there, and Knight was over by Havlicek's locker, and I went in over there. And I went over to shake Knight's hand because mm-hmm. he had such a great career.
Yep.
And I didn't know whether he was going to maybe decapitate me or shake
yeah.
or shake my hand.
Yeah.
And I just kind of shook his hand and said, congratulations on all the success you've had. And Hondo, I said, Hondo's a great guy here with this team, with the Celtics and all that. And he kind of just nodded his head, and he was very polite, and, you know, he was courteous, and he didn't say two words, but that was okay. It was kind of fun to meet him.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had that experience with Tom Sanders. I think I told you that one day at the Garden. I was sitting with a friend who had season tickets right in front of Red Auerbach, and you know Auerbach would have two or three people with him every game. You know, this is in the old Garden, right on the, you remember where he was sat, right on the floor there.
Right.
And Roger Campbell was the man, and Roger had seats in front of Auerbach, and then Tom Sanders, Sat Sanders had just been named the Harvard coach, Harvard University coach.
Yeah.
And I asked my friend, I said, Roger, you're here all the time sitting in front of Auerbach. Do you think at halftime it'd be okay to go up and just shake Sat Sanders' hands and meet him? And he said, sure, go ahead. And I did. And yep. Sat Sanders stood up as I went to shake. He stood up to welcome me. And it's
yep.
like, really? And he was such a gentleman. We talked for maybe 2 or 3 minutes, just, you know, small talk. But he was such a polite and engaging guy. And I love watching him. Number 15, was he 15? I think he was number 15.
16, I
want to say. Was it 16?
Heinsohn was 15, and I think it was number 16. Yeah.
Sharman, okay. Okay.
Yeah,
anyway.
15.
Okay. All right. So just switching gears here quickly, Mike, because,
yes.
I don't know what to think of the game the other night. So you're going to have to put this in perspective. The game they beat Milwaukee, and they should have beat Milwaukee the night before.
Right.
Two nights before. But they played with a vengeance, in beating Milwaukee. Rather easily in the most recent game. Oh no, they beat Oklahoma.
Yeah.
But the Milwaukee game stood out to me, and I just wonder what your perception is of all of this and how meaningful the trade is.
Well, I think the trade can be meaningful because they certainly needed a shakeup, and I just saw that Evan Fournier obviously was upgraded to being able to play tonight. So that's a good sign. The guy is averaging 19.7 points per game. He can't do anything but help. This guy, Luke Kornet, who played the other night, was certainly a contributor against the OKC Thunder. They're trying to, maybe still develop chemistry. And why not bring some new guys? Because they weren't going to go anywhere with the team as it was constructed just a few weeks ago. So why not try something now to try to better your playoff position and try to win a first-round series and build some confidence? I think in that sense, the trade was a good one. And I know, obviously, Jason Tatum mentioned he didn't like losing Javonte Green, but Javonte Green was a minor contributor on the court. So we'll see how it goes. But I kind of like the way it shook out. I do like Evan Fournier as a player. He's always been a scorer. And obviously Robert Williams is going to get more playing time now that Daniel Tice is gone. So I think that's good for the team as well, because I believe that Robert Williams has been their best defensive player this entire season. And with Marcus Smart back, he gives them a little bit more defense as well.
And Wagner looks like he's got a motor.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he's kind of a fun player to watch. He's kind of wild out there. You don't know what he's going to do next.
Yeah.
But what the heck? I mean, he can be a serviceable backup, you know? So, Tristan Thompson supposedly is still on the roster. I mean, but he's been out with COVID protocol for a few weeks now. And I don't know what his motivation is at this point. It's kind of questionable. Because supposedly the Celtics behind the scenes are upset with him for continually breaking, the obvious protocol rules. It's like he doesn't feel like playing anymore. I don't know. I can't get into his head.
Oh, wow.
Figure out what his motivation is.
Yeah.
But there certainly has been intimations that he's been sort of like taking a few weeks off. And that's certainly not a good thing. But hey, you know what? If Robert Williams keeps getting more playing time and he's got backups like this Kornet guy and Wagner. Do we call him Wagner, by the way, or Wagner? I know.
Well, listen, my algebra 2 teacher in high school, her last name was, oh my God, I can't remember. It was something like that. It was W-A-L-K-E-R. And she said it's Volker with a V.
Hey?
It's Volker. So if he calls himself Wagner, then it's Wagner. That's it.
I agree. Now, I heard a late report tonight that the Celtics are pursuing DeMarcus Cousins.
Oh, my. Really?
And of course, DeMarcus Cousins in his best year with Sacramento put up some big numbers. He's always kind of a head case. And he's been banged up the last 2 or 3 years. He's been bought out by a couple of teams. And he's free to sign with anybody. And I say, why not? He's a big body. Mm-hmm. In the past, he's been capable of getting you know, at his prime when he's getting you 25. No, so why not bring him in as a backup, another backup? They're not losing anything by trying him out.
All right, before we go, Tim wants to talk about UConn women.
Of course, why not? Right? I mean, I know they're. Tim, I think you mentioned they might have a close game a week ago, and they didn't. They won by 40, and then I noticed in the most recent game they won by 20. So, is there any stiff competition for them left?
Well, Baylor is giving them a game right now. I last looked, and it was 38-37. Baylor would come back and take it a one-point lead, but I haven't checked it in the last year. There's commercials, so I imagine it's halftime. But they're in a dogfight with Baylor.
Well, Baylor, of course, has had a nice history with them. They've beaten UConn a couple of times in important games, and good coaching staff down there. And we'll see how it goes. And of course, the Baylor men are still in it too, so it's a good time for Baylor student body to be cheering on both teams.
Exactly.
You know, Mike, that was incredible. Your research into the tournament and going back over those games. I really appreciate that. That elevated our whole show. Thank you.
Well, no, you're welcome. I just got intrigued when I saw that Gonzaga was 29, and I just remembered the last team to do that was that 1976 Indiana team. And 32-0. And there's been so many great players that came out of that team and those UCLA teams with Walton and Alcindor and Mike Warren and Henry Bibby, who of course was the father of Mike Bibby. when they won it in 1964, they were kind of a guard-oriented team before Al Cinder got there. And it was Henry Bibby was the star of that team. So certainly some great, great UCLA teams dominated that era, as we know. Huh, Tim? I believe they went to 7 consecutive NCAA championship games. They absolutely dominated the nation year after year with John Wooden as the coach.
You didn't go into the college basketball season thinking, oh, here comes UCLA again. It was like, okay, it's UCLA time.
And yeah.
I remember being a kid, you rooted for UCLA. You wanted them to continue to play with that magic because, you know, I mean, they were that good. You know,
no, they were that good. No question.
Sidney Wicks, Curtis Rowe, Steve Patterson. You know?
And Wooden, of course, was, as we know, back in the 60s, was way ahead of his time in terms of recruiting the best players, which gave him a clear advantage. I mean, he certainly knew which players to target to continue the dynasty that it became, and no other coach or school could do it for a long time, you know, until, you know, obviously Duke started having some good players. And North Carolina's always had good players, but no one dominated the scene, let's say, over a decade's amount of time, over a decade, like UCLA did in the 1960s and early 70s.
Yep, sure. And that 68 game against Houston, well, they went to the Astrodome and lost by, 2 points, Elvin Hayes?
Yeah, and then they came back later that year in the championship game and blew out Houston.
Yep.
All right, guys, this is great. Yep. Mike, it's a holiday week. It's a solemn week for our Jewish brethren. And
yes.
It's for the rest of for Christianity. It's Easter. Happy Easter.
Yep.
Happy Passover. Be safe, and we'll talk to you Monday.
It sounds great, Rick, and thanks for tapping into this NCAA stuff. It's great.
Oh, it's fabulous. Thank you, Mike.
Tim, you take care as well. Have a great Easter, both of you.
Talk to you later. You know it.
Right on.
All right, that's Mike Grenier, who is I guess he's a sports historian too, wouldn't you say, Tim?
yeah, you think?
That's good stuff, man. Oh. Right, and you remember the Indiana thing. I didn't. I thought it was UCLA. What's that?
Walking down memory lane.
Yeah, but I it's funny. You remembered Indiana. I thought it was UCLA. I totally forgot about Indiana. Any final thoughts, Coach?
Connecticut's trailing by 2.5.
Yeah, well, but you're not worried, are you?
Bale's a very, very good team.
Okay. All right.
So, am I confident they're going to win? Yeah.
Okay. All right. And this time next week, we're going to be talking a little bit about the Red Sox to see where they started. And they're away. They're at Baltimore on Thursday, right?
Yeah. You know, when I heard they were opening up against Baltimore, but well, that's a great traditional opening game. You know, American League East, traditional opponent.
Yeah.
Baltimore, Baltimore's always been my second favorite team. Always has been.
And it's a semi-warm climate down there, and the Camden Yards is beautiful. So, yeah, great way to start.
Oh, great place to watch a game.
All right, Coach. Thanks so much. Pretty soon we're going to be back in studio together. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to pushing buttons.
So am I. You're pushing buttons, yes. All right, Tim, thanks. talk to you later.
All right, buddy.
All right, good night. That is Tim Kearns, who is our MSO Sports Analyst Extraordinaire and our MSO Ambassador of Goodwill. I'm Rick Moore, a producer and engineer, Bill Poposky, a producer and engineer. Get the word out, engineer, Bill Poposky. And, of course, Bill Newell off tonight, and he'll be back soon. We'll talk to you all later. On behalf of all those great folk, we thank you very much for joining us. You can email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. I'm Rick Moore. This is msonewsports.com.